"That's right," Winslade said. "I think we've lost the rest of the Legion. Minotaur hasn't blown up or lost orbit, but she's dead as far as we can tell from the ground. There's no response to any transmissions we've made requesting their status." That was a punch in the gut for me. I'd had no idea things were that bad. Sure, there'd been venting from the engine core, but all of them? Dead? "Primus," Graves asked, "is this speculation, or is it confirmed?" Winslade eyed him. "Confirmed. Their computers acknowledge our requests, but nothing other than pre-programmed responses have come back. The Skull crew must be dead as well. Only the AI remains active, and it's of limited usefulness. What we have gotten from it amounts to statistical data showing onboard conditions. The engines are disabled, and the atmosphere aboard is deadly, where it exists at all. The regions that remained pressurized are toxic. The radiation levels are serious. Even in suits, any survivors must be in dire straits." Graves considered.
"So we've lost 90% of our force. What about the troops that came down via drop pods?"
"Most of them made it. Better than 60%, in fact. They'll be gathering into units and proceeding to our position over the next 20 hours.
93% of the Legion lost," Graves said, shaking his head. "I have only one more critical question, sir. Do we have a revival unit on this lifter?"
Winslade smiled. "We do. A single unit. So far, it's automatically queued itself up with cohort losses and those of us who were confirmed dead during the drops. Now, people, I need input. What's our strategy?"
Right about then, despite the fact I was in a mild form of shock, I had to admire Winslade. He was arrogant, he was sometimes petty, and always dramatic. But here he was again, doing the right thing. He knew Graves had 5 more decades of experience fighting in space than he did. He wanted to live, so he was asking for help. He was flat out admitting he needed it. That made it harder to hate the man. Graves took in a deep breath.
"Let's talk about our revival strategy first. We should keep reviving our own people until we have firm knowledge of Minotaur's state. We don't want to duplicate personnel here on the surface if they're not confirmed dead in space."
Winslade nodded. "Agreed. How do we proceed tactically?"
Graves turned to the central display. A few others huddled up with him. All of them were Centurions, so I hung back. They talked for about 30 minutes. In the end, it was decided that we'd have to scout the enemy base. Supposedly, it had been annihilated by our broadsides, but that hadn't been confirmed. After we'd dealt with the enemy on the planet, we had to come up with a way to recapture Minotaur. Without that ship, we had no way to get back home. But taking her back, that sounded like it was going to be a tall order.
Chapter 16. Leeson popped out of the revival system and began to hassle me almost as soon as he was able to draw breath. He couldn't do it very well, as he kept having coughing fits.
"What's this I hear from Harris about you usurping my platoon, McGill?" he demanded.
I looked him over speculatively.
"Sir, you're swaying a bit. Maybe you should catch your breath." "Oh, no," he said, shaking his head and going into another coughing spasm. "That's how it starts. That's how a man finds himself replaced. I'm not falling for that, especially after what you did to Harris."
"Adjunct, all I did was follow Centurion Graves's orders."
"Yeah, right. Sure. You want me to believe you're just some kind of country slapdick, right? That there's not a scheming thought in your mind? Forget it, McGill. I'm not falling for that one."
"Your orders, sir?" I asked, suppressing a sigh.
"Just stay the hell out of my way. Those are your orders. No, hold on. I've got a better idea. I want you out on patrol. Deep patrol. See if you can find some of the stragglers from the drop pods. Barring that, maybe you can find yourself a sweet way to get killed."
I spun around on my heel and headed out of the lifter. Angry but resigned, I gathered up my team and we took a hike in the brush.
What was the officers' meeting about, James?
Natasha asked me. Not knowing what to say, I just shook my head and grunted. Sometimes that works. We were almost out of sight of the lifter, 1,000 paces into the forest. No matter what anyone said about megaflora, I couldn't help thinking of this place as one giant forest. Sure, the trees looked weird, and they were as much purple as they were green and brown, but they might as well be trees. They had trunks, branches, and thick flowering sprouts on top. Their crowns were so distant overhead, however, they looked like mountains seen through a haze of cloud cover. I turned around and stared back at the lifter where Graves and the rest of them had remained.
Look at that, I said. That lifter looks tiny in this forest. The trees dwarf it like a toy.
Natasha looked back, as did a few others. One of them was Carlos. He turned me a suspicious eye.
So how come we're out here marching around in the undergrowth instead of camping with the rest of the cohort?
I shrugged. Harris complained, that's why.
That bastard. He's worse than Winslade in his own way.
Now, now, I chided. None of that. He's nowhere near that bad.
You still haven't answered my question, Natasha said at my side. What happened in the meeting?
This time I stopped dodging and laid it out for her. She was smart, and her face was squinched up with worry by the time I finished explaining.
So, we're screwed? She asked.
Well and truly, I admitted. The only good news is that Winslade brought along a revival machine. Carlos hooted at that and joined us.
You know why he did that, don't you? He never leaves home without a revival machine in close proximity. I bet that thing is programmed to spit him out the second he croaks.
Could be, I admitted. But in this case, his caution has benefited us all. We can take a few losses and still keep going.
A few losses? Carlos demanded incredulously. Have you somehow failed to notice we're as good as wiped right now? This has got to be the biggest fiasco we've ever been part of.
Nowhere close, I said, shaking my head. Remember back on Tech World, it was down to Galina Turov and me alone at one point. Everyone else was as dead as a mackerel on a dock, including you. Now that was a fiasco. That shut Carlos up for some reason. He frowned, not liking talk of his non-existence, even though it had been temporary. Natasha stepped close to me again.
What are we looking for?
Survivors from the pod drops. Those sorry bastards did even worse than we did.
What else did the officers say in the meeting? What's their plan?
They were talking about reviving people, what order, who should go first, who they could be sure was really dead, that sort of thing. She nodded thoughtfully.
I know what I would do.
What?
I'd revive the crew of the freighter. They might know what happened back on Earth. They might know who our enemy really is.
I halted and frowned at her. Who our enemy really is? What do you mean?
I want to know who's making these plant constructs and sending them at us in droves, and who came along and blew up the freighter in the first place.
Shrugging, I continued to march. I don't know why it matters much. They did it, and we're here to find and destroy them.
But they're putting up quite a fight, wouldn't you say? It would help a lot to at least know why they did it.
The more I thought about it, the more I came to believe she was right. Okay, I said. But do we even have the freighter crew's data?
We do. I checked.
I chuckled. Of course Natasha had checked. She wasn't supposed to have access to the bio database, but that sort of thing had never stopped her before. If she was curious about what a given computer knew, she would dig it up whether she was authorized to do so or not.
So we have their data. How do we know the crew wasn't already revived back on Earth?
Natasha hesitated. She looked over her shoulder to make sure the others in the patrol were out of earshot. They weren't, but Carlos was telling a loud story and no one was listening to us at the moment.
I happen to know that Turov was given the data, with instructions to revive the crew members if she felt they might be useful.
We were coming into a dense region of undergrowth where the huge, waxy pods hung down from the nearest tree. They didn't sprout from the crown, but from much lower down, just above the gnarly roots. The pods themselves were odd things, the color and general shape of a jalapeno pepper. Fresh, shiny, and dark green, just like poison. I halted and poked at the nearest of them with my rifle. You think these things are seed pods or something?
Yes, probably part of their reproductive cycle.
The pods were over 30 meters tall. They hung from fresh-grown tubers until they touched the forest floor. It was startling to think a seed could be so large, but it made sense. The adult megagrowths, after all, were 100 times as big. I stopped poking the pod and turned to Natasha.
This isn't an accidental conversation, is it? You want me to go back there and kick around the idea of reviving the crew, is that it? How do you think that's going to go over? Turov could have done it at any point on the flight out here, but she didn't.
Exactly, Natasha said, looking up at me with a gleam in her eye. That's a mystery, isn't it? Why avoid an obvious resource of data on an unknown enemy?
I don't feel like reviving Turov to ask her about that.
She's the last person I would ask, Natasha admitted. But she's not around, is she? Remember the chain of command, James. Who's in charge now? Who has every right to sate their curiosity in this desperate situation?
I stared at her for a second. Winslade. Winslade is in charge. She nodded, watching me. Sighing and shaking my head, I could already envision my fate. She'd put these thoughts into my head, shoving them in one at a time until my mind was full. She'd known exactly what she was doing, too.
You're a sneaky one, I said. You're trying to get me into trouble again, aren't you?
96% of us are dead, at last count. I'd say you're already in trouble. We all are.
Why don't you march into Winslade's office and tell him all this? Why don't you do it your damn self? She laughed quietly.
I'm good at a lot of things, but I can't stir a pot like you can, James. No one can.
I opened my mouth, planning to agree with her, but right then we heard a sharp cracking noise. Frowning, we turned toward the pod that hung close enough to touch. It had split open a fraction. As we watched, the crackling turned into a ripping noise, and a seam in the plant gave way, tearing with the sound of a splitting tree trunk all the way up to the stem overhead. Inside the split, which was now several centimeters wide, we saw movement. Chapter 17. Needless to say, my squad was surprised by the thing that tore its way out of the pod. Its appearance was disturbing. I don't know how else to describe it other than to say it was man-shaped. It looked like a gigantic, lanky humanoid with limbs of brownish green and skin like wet bark. There were no eyes or other obvious sensory organs, but there were fronds here and there, hanging from the body. These pulpy, sickly orange fronds ended in polyps that flopped and pulsated. I wasn't sure if they were organs like lungs or eyeballs or what. "Fall back!" I shouted, taking my own advice and stumbling away from the massive creature. "Don't fire yet. We don't know if it's hostile."
"Should I let it eat me first, vet?" Carlos called out. "Just to be sure."
The creature took 2 sweeping strides forward and stood in our midst. The fronds hanging from its body shivered and drifted up and down like bouncing hair as it walked.
"This is amazing," Natasha said in a delighted voice. "I've never seen anything like it. How does it move? What kind of musculature does it have? I'm dying to find out."
"Keep backing up," I ordered. "Sargon, have you got a bead on that big bulbous pod on top?"
"Got it sighted, vet."
About 10 seconds passed, during which the newborn creature stood and swayed. The orange fronds hanging from it kept swelling and lifting higher, like slowly inflating balloons.
"Did you see that?" Natasha asked.
She was the only one staying close to the monster. She was walking around it in a circle.
See what, specialist?
One of those external growths. I'm sure it's tracking me. I'm getting the impression it's a sensory organ of some kind.
I saw it now. It was tracking her. The orange floating polyps were drifting, but with more purpose. They'd locked on to Natasha, and when she walked around the standing monster, they followed her movements.
I don't like it, I told her. Back off, specialist.
It's shown no hostile intent, she insisted. I'm going to try to get a sample. If it's a plant, plucking a low-hanging frond shouldn't...
Nah, I'm not a rule follower as such, but Natasha's idea alarmed me. I knew her well, and she was the type that could only be brought to break rules and laws when she was curious or to help a friend. In this case, it was the former. Before I could order her back yet again, she trotted in close to the two monstrous feet and plucked a frond. It was only a small one attached to what might be the monster's toes. In my opinion, it shouldn't have hurt any more than plucking a single hair out of a cat's paw might. But I was wrong. The creature reacted as if stung. Torpid and confused before, it moved with sudden purpose. A hooting sound erupted from far above us. It was as if someone had activated a foghorn and left it on. Long, low, and loud, a single note of noise rolled out over the forest and made our ears ring. Spinning its vast bulk around with a speed that belied its behavior thus far, the monster dipped one of those seven-fingered hands toward Natasha.
Fire!
I roared, having seen enough. The squad opened up, lashing the tree and legs with explosive pellets. Sargon's belcher had been craned to a medium-wide aperture, and he used it to burn away a dozen clumps of those strange orange fronds. A few of the big ones even caught fire. The creature went absolutely berserk after that. It missed Natasha with its scooping sweep of a claw-like hand, but then it switched tactics and began to stomp. Hansen died, then the rookie Lau. It went after Carlos next, but he dodged away and ran off, screeching and firing over his shoulder.
Sargon, narrow that beam and take its head off.
Not sure it's got a head, sir.
You know what I mean.
Sargon fired, but just took a burning chunk out of the shoulder. The beast spun around and crashed onto the forest floor. Carlos was still running, almost out of reach. That long, long arm shot out again. It caught Carlos as a man might catch a fleeing rat. Lying on its side, the monster lifted him up to its upper body and seemed to study him briefly before popping him into its maw and crunching down methodically. Carlos only screamed once before he died in those massive jaws. The hole was a little small, so the creature had to shove to get him in there, all the while chewing enthusiastically. I would have thought his armor would have saved him, but the creature exerted such great pressure on the breastplate, it collapsed with a wet, popping sound. The creature's distraction gave Sargon time to take aim. The monster's slavering jaws and eyeless face gave it a slack, idiotic expression. It chewed with mechanical efficiency. Sargon blew the bulbous head clean off. Before he did, however, I was treated to the sight of blood running down the side of the tree trunk face. After being shot, it didn't die right away. We had to blast away every sensory frond and destroy its limbs one after another. Even after that, the burnt carcass still twitched and rolled around on the forest floor like a haunted log that had been struck by lightning. Breathing hard, I grabbed Natasha by the shoulder and spun her around. She was still examining the thing.
"Happy now?"
I demanded. She blinked at me uncomprehendingly for a moment. The odd thing was, she did look sort of happy.
"That was amazing," she said breathlessly. "I've never even read about anything like this. Do you know what this means, James? They aren't constructs. They're grown this way by these trees. All this time, I was under the impression that the creatures that attacked Minotaur were a form of genetically engineered bioweapon, something cooked up by a scientist like me. But I was wrong. The megaflora... They grow these monsters. I think they're a natural form of defense.
Peering at her, then looking at the carcass, I had a hard time understanding her words.
I lost 3 good people because you didn't follow orders, I told her. That's what I know. You're on report, and you might be on your way to the brig.
I'm sorry, she said. Can I complete my investigations first?
Giving up, I made a sweeping gesture with my arm toward the fallen monster, which was still flopping this way and that.
Be my guest, girl. Have at it. But the rest of you, if Natasha gets rolled on or squirted with acid, do not endanger yourself to save her. That's an order.
I stomped away to check on the dead and the wounded, while Natasha busily poked and probed at the dead creature. While she worked, I reported the encounter to my superiors. Graves came on a few minutes later.
That's the second report we've had of pod growth. What does Natasha think they are?
She says there's some kind of natural defense for these plants.
Right. Makes sense. Bring samples back to camp, and you should be heading back soon. Darkness is coming, and the word is that there are more of these creatures moving around out there.
An hour later, we dragged ourselves back to the lifter with samples of the monster on our backs. Natasha made her report to Graves while I stood near.
The blood and digestive fluids are acidic, she said, but not dangerously so. They aren't the same manifestation as the creatures that attacked Minotaur. Still, we have to assume they're related.
But they're plants, Graves said. Have you figured out yet what makes them move? What kind of musculature they have?
Think about them as something akin to a beetle or a crab, Natasha said. What I mean is, they have a shell rather than bones. They have a tough cellulose exoskeleton, but they keep all the organs and muscle inside. They have an alien form of muscle. It's not like ours.
So, do you still think the megaflora is growing them on purpose?
Graves asked,
as a defensive mechanism against us.
I'm almost certain of it. That's the only explanation that makes sense. These creatures weren't here until we landed, and now they've been growing and breaking out of their pods. What's even more interesting is their chosen physiology. In my opinion, they're mimicking human anatomy.
Graves said. Why?
I'm not sure, but I'm certain it's by design. The initial creatures that assaulted our ship were less humanoid. These are bigger, but more like a man. Whatever shape they take, they're dangerous.
You have my complete agreement there,
Graves said, reviewing the video showing Carlos being eaten. Graves turned toward me then.
Miguel, what was the count of pods on that tree where you found this abomination?
Hesitating, I at last shook my head. I didn't take a firm count. I would say there were less than a dozen, sir. Natasha raised her tapper and pointed to it.
I was taking streaming video the whole time. I count 14, including the one that we destroyed.
13 more monsters in the forest, Graves said thoughtfully. That's my lucky number. Did you know that, McGill?
I'm not feeling so lucky today, Centurion. Graves walked away and left me with Natasha.
Seriously, Specialist? I told her. I need you to follow orders when we're under fire.
When have you ever...
I halted her with an upraised hand.
That's not true. I follow the orders that matter, orders that are justified and which will save my fellows and my mission. You endangered all of us to satisfy your curiosity.
Veteran McGill,
she said, drawing herself up straight.
I don't think you're being fair. We discovered an amazing new life form. Don't worry about Carlos. He'll pop back out of the oven in a few hours.
Shaking my head, I turned to go. She wasn't getting what I was saying, and I was tired of repeating it.
Just a moment, she said. Aren't you going to talk to Winslade?
About the revival queue? I guess it doesn't seem all that important to me after the events of the afternoon.
James, the freighter crew may have information that's vital to the success of this mission. Let's not have all this turn out to have been a waste, because I got curious.
She knew how to get to me. She knew I hated the idea of suffering and dying needlessly. All right, I said. I'll give it a shot. She nodded while I tramped up to the officer's deck. As far as I was concerned, I was on a fool's errand. Winslade didn't even want to listen to me, much less take any advice I had to offer. After I'd explained to the Primus about the dead crew of the freighter and that we had reserved the right to revive them during this pursuit, he gave me an odd look.
"Claver," Winslade said. "You're talking about Claver, right? I knew you had a shady past with that snake, McGill, but I didn't think you'd go this far."
Blinking, I stared at him for a moment. "What's Claver got to do with this, sir?" I asked.
"You're going to play it that way again, are you? The hulking ignoramus routine? It gets old, McGill, it really does." "Claver was on the freighter. You arranged that part yourself, according to legend, helping him to get the titanium delivery contracts."
"I don't remember anything about delivery contracts."
Winslade rolled his eyes at me. I hated that, but I waited for him to explain. "How else did you expect Claver to cash in on the lucrative deal you helped set up for him if he wasn't flying cargo back and forth from Machine World? Didn't your best friend at least send you a text?"
I frowned, thinking hard. Claver had been given the right to trade titanium from Machine World, but only to other parties, not to Earth. We got our share for free.
"I'm confused, sir," I began. "To put it mildly."
"Well, I mean, the last I knew of Claver, he was on Earth. He was arrested, you know, and put on notice by Central. I didn't know he was released to go out to Machine World and do business."
Winslade crossed his arms and huffed. "Central, arresting Claver. You're talking about Equestrian Nagata. That man has no idea what will stick and what won't. He's honorable but stupid. Central wasn't going to let anyone hold Claver. Earth needs that titanium. Who better to get it than a snake like your friend?"
I followed his logic to a degree. Apparently, Claver had been authorized to transport and deliver titanium from Machine World. It wasn't surprising that I hadn't heard about that. I ducked out of Legion politics as quickly as I could once I'd returned home to Earth. But now here I was, back in the middle of it all.
"But, sir," I objected, "Claver was given the right to trade titanium with other worlds, not Earth."
"Right," Winslade said in a condescending tone.
"Let's go over the logic of that statement, shall we? One trader was given the right to transport and sell some of the titanium to other worlds, while the balance went to us. Now, how do you think the actual delivery went down?"
"I have no idea."
"I thought not. It's the same as the delivery of any product. Claver was already transporting the product to multiple customer worlds. Why wouldn't he make his delivery rounds in a single ship, collecting a transportation fee from everyone along the way, of course?"
"Of course," I said, finally catching on. Claver was a slippery businessman. If there was a profit to be made, a deal to be cut, he'd get it done. I could see how he'd used his position to lever delivery contracts with Earth in addition to other worlds. The metal was free, technically, but it still had to be transported. It only made sense to have one transportation network from a supplier world. Why duplicate the effort?
"So," I said, "you're saying Claver was aboard the freighter, according to the manifest, and he died when the ship slammed into Earth?" "He was probably long dead by that time, but your statement is accurate enough in the essentials."
"Well, sir," I said, "then I suggest we revive him."
"What a surprise. Let's hear your reasons just for the record."
"Because if there's one man in the cosmos who knows what the hell is going on out here, it's Claver. He may not want to tell us, but he knows the score."
Winslade chewed on his upper lip for a time. I tried not to watch. "Agreed," he said at last. "He's the only one we can ask. After Turov and Tribune Drusus have been revived and given their blessings, we'll..."
"Whoa, hold on there," I said. "Let's back that up, Primus. I strongly recommend that we get Klaiba out right now, before anyone else."
Winslade frowned at me.
"Whatever for? Are you trying to get me into difficulties with my superiors? I know you excel at that sort of thing."
"I do, sir, I do. But I want you to think about something. If Turov could have revived Klaiba at any point along this search into space, why didn't she do it?"
Winslade's eyes narrowed until they resembled those of a ferret.
"You're right. Such primitive cunning. But it's undeniable. If she'd wanted to do it, she would have done it during the voyage out here."
"Exactly, sir. And might I add that if she didn't want to do it before, she's not going to allow it once she's back in charge of this mission."
Winslade looked stressed. He began to pace. I could see the warring thoughts within his mind. He wasn't sure what he should do. If he crossed Turov, it would cost him. But then again, he wanted to know what Klaiba might say. His own survival might hang in the balance.
"There is something wrong here," he said. "I'll admit that. And another point has occurred to me. Did you know Turov wasn't too keen on this mission to begin with? She wanted to turn around and abandon the search after the first target world was missed."
"I heard something to that effect, sir."
Winslade eyed me with calculated respect.
"You've got my mind churning, veteran."
"Yes, Primus. I excel at that."
Winslade flicked his eyes down to his desk. He tapped on a virtual keypad that appeared before him, and soon the revival queue, as it stood now, was displayed. He studied it and made tisking sounds.
"This won't do at all," he said. "I'm going to go further than you suggested. I'm going to fully streamline the revival queue. I'll make sure the best possible use of our limited resources is achieved."
For a second, I blinked at him. Then I got it. He was going to reorder the queue, micromanaging the process. He would decide who lived again and who stayed dead.
"I understand perfectly, sir."
"I wouldn't go that far," he said in a condescending tone. "But you understand enough to do my bidding. That will suffice."
Chapter 18. We moved ourselves down to the revival chambers. After waiting around for a few minutes, we saw the bio-specialist in charge leave the room. She gave us an up-down look, but didn't say anything, as we both outranked her. When she hurried away down the passage, we quickly ducked inside. Editing a revival queue isn't all that hard to do, especially not when the acting CO has given you the go-ahead. I hacked my way past the login screen easily enough. Our first snag came when the system required me to enter a comment in a memo box justifying the change. Winslade and I looked at one another in concern. "This input field is a new one," I said.
"Indeed. Someone has altered the data entry screens to add this requirement."
"Do you think it was the bio people, or maybe a new firmware release from Central?"
Winslade shrugged.
"It hardly matters. The pertinent detail is that the system is logging our changes, including who made them, when, and why. What's your answer, McGill?"
"Me?" I asked, aghast.
"I'm supposed to put in the answer?"
"You're making the alterations. I'm a bystander. Technically, I'm not even here."
So saying, he stepped away and looked into the distance. Maybe he thought his face might get into a vid recording somehow. My lips twisted up into an expression of disgust. Winslade was as quick and slippery as a snake in a grease fire, and he was just about as ornery, too. Cracking my knuckles, I typed in a spray of text and hit enter. Winslade turned around on his heel and came back to stand at my side.
"What did you enter?"
he asked. "Nothing special, just some vague double talk. I've heard it all my life, and it comes out naturally when convenient." Winslade snorted.
"Indeed. Well, enough, then."
"Who shall we revive first?"
I asked.
Claver, Winslade said. As you suggested earlier, push him to the top of the queue.
I did so, and locked it in. And what's next?
Take these names off the list,
Winslade said, sliding a computer scroll in front of me. The list contained the names of everyone in the Legion who outranked him, either by virtue of position or seniority. In particular, he'd taken pains to remove senior brass from the list entirely, putting them on hold.
Are you sure about this, sir?
Just do it, McGill.
I didn't like it, but I did it. I adjusted the queue and saved it. A few short minutes later, a tapping sound began at the chamber door. Anne's face appeared in the foggy porthole. Maybe she'd been alerted somehow. Then I saw that the bio we'd chased off earlier was with her. Doubtlessly, the woman had gone to get Anne. Anne was frowning at us like we were two urchins in her kitchen, sneaking cookie dough. I knew the look well. Two non-bio people were fooling with her most holy of holy machines. That wouldn't do at all for any self-respecting bio.
They're getting restless, I said.
Too bad. Do you have any other suggested edits while we're at it? Who should come out after Claver? It can't be the brass, not yet. We have to have time to interrogate Claver thoroughly before anyone can take command and remove me from my position.
After thinking about it for a moment or two, I came up with an idea. How about prioritizing combat troops? I asked. We'll load up everyone who's died in this cohort first. That way we'll have hours to talk to him while the rest of the cohort people are spit out.
Excellent. There are operational precedents for that sort of thing. When under fire from local resistance, unit cohesion comes first. Frontline troops are often revived before top-level brass. We'll claim the situation was an emergency, and that the reordering of the revival process was necessary.
As good a dodge as any.
Do it. Make the rest of the edits and reactivate the machine.
But sir, if I do that, it will abort the current grow. Can't we just let this one finish and then bring Claver out next? Even as I said these words, Anne's fist began hammering on the door. Her face was in the porthole again, one eye roving angrily.
As you can see, Winslade said, we already have our first objector. I want this over with. We must be ruthless and quick. Perform all your questionable deeds at midnight, McGill. Do them all at once, as fast as you can. Those are words to live by.
If you say so, sir, I said. Gritting my teeth, I typed in the changes and engaged the confirmation code. The machine began to burble and made sloshing sounds. The noises reminded me of a dishwasher switching into the rinse cycle. I hated to hear that sound. After less than a minute, the maw yawned open and disgorged a half-baked person. The living corpse was gray and malformed. I'd expected it might be small like a baby, but it wasn't. The machine apparently grew people differently than a normal gestation of an infant. It formed the cellular structure of an adult and kept refining the shape until it got it right. The thing looked like a slug with fat, curled-up arms and legs. The gray skin was covered in slime.
"That's got to be the foulest thing," Winslade said.
Anne must have caught sight of our latest action, and she didn't approve. She burst into the chamber, puffing with anger.
"What is the meaning of this act?" she demanded. "Who's responsible for aborting this grow?" "Remain calm, specialist," Winslade said. You do it all the time when something goes wrong. But this was a perfectly good grow. You killed it.
Truer words were never spoken. Partially formed lungs heaved and sighed. They rattled their last, and the proto-person shivered in death.
Recycle this mess, Winslade ordered. Do not alter the queue as it now stands. Alert me when the next grow is complete.
He left then, with an imperious air. I had to admit he knew how to give orders like a pro.
"I'm sorry, Anne," I said when he left. "This has got to be your idea," she said.
"Not at all. Check the memo in the work order." She did, and she frowned.
authorized by Primus Leonard Winslade, acting commander. Alteration request approved. Reasons classified. What the hell is this?
That's what he had me type in, I said. He was in charge. I just knew how to do what he wanted. Maybe he thought a real bio would give him grief.
He was right about that. You wait until I make my full report. Winslade will wish he'd never been revived this time around. Turov will tear him apart.
Inwardly, I grinned. My ad-lib memo field was already coming in handy. I was fairly certain it would reap even bigger rewards later on.
"Aren't you interested to know why he really did it?" I asked. "Yes, I suppose. Tell me."
I pointed to the queue. "Did you happen to notice the next name on that list? The next Grow, who even now is gestating inside the guts of the machine?" Anne looked, and she gasped.
"Claver! Tell me this is some kind of mistake!"
Shrugging and shaking my head, I endeavored to look innocent. "I'm following orders," I said. "I didn't even know he was aboard Minotaur."
"Don't be a... Never mind. Yes, James, he was on the manifest. We've had this data since we left Earth. He died on the freighter when it crashed into Earth. At least, that's when his death became officially recognized. We've had the authorization to revive him since that time."
"Why didn't Turov do it?"
"I don't know. It does seem odd. The machine sat idle for nearly a month. Why let him linger in death for so long? And why is Winslade bringing him back now, when we need this single machine to revive an entire legion?"
"Different commanders, different priorities." Anne narrowed her eyes.
"You know more than you're letting on, right? Never mind. Don't tell me. I don't want to get into politics. The only thing slimier than the guts of this machine is the twisted double dealings of people like Winslade and Turov. I want no part of it."
I nodded and shut up. It was easy to keep quiet. After all, I barely knew what was going on myself. But I intended to find out.
Chapter 19. By the time Claver was coming out of the oven, things were heating up outside the lifter as well. We were back in Winslade's office, where he was looking over incoming reports.
"My helmet's buzzing non-stop," Winslade complained.
He glowered as he worked his tapper.
"Those things you discovered out there in the forest, how many do you think you saw?"
I shrugged. 13 was the count, but that's only counting the production of a single tree. There might be more." Winslade's expression changed to one of worry.
"No weaponry, right? Just a pack of big, walking bipeds?"
Thinking about the monster I'd witnessed, its power and sudden fury, I didn't want to downplay how dangerous an army of them might be. "We only fought one, but it had just crawled out of its cocoon. Even so, the damn thing killed one of my people before we brought it down. By the way, sir, did we bring any heavy weaponry down from Minotaur on this lifter?" Winslade eyed me for a second.
"There have been over 100 sightings now. The confirmed reports number half that many. But the aliens haven't moved against us yet. They're maneuvering out there in the forest, just beyond our reach."
"I don't like the sound of that, sir. If they come at us all at once and organized, well, sir, in my opinion, superior firepower may not be enough."
"I'll recall all our patrols," Winslade said after a moment's thought. "No one is to go more than a kilometer from the lifter. We'll force the aliens to march into a killing zone."
I watched in concern as he relayed these orders to Graves and the other Centurions. We had 6 full units of troops now, 600 heavy infantry. He hadn't answered my question about artillery. Maybe there wasn't any. Maybe Turov had wanted to make sure we survived the descent before she committed expensive equipment. If that was the case, we were more screwed than I'd thought. My next move should have been to leave the revival room and rejoin my squad. They were outside preparing fortifications now, and if an army of those things was approaching, I needed to be with them. But before I could excuse myself, Anne contacted us.
"Claver is coming out now.
James, would you come help me? I'm in the middle of a shift change on orderlies.
Never having been a fan of this process, I marched down there to help. It was the least I could do. My teeth were gritted for the next few minutes while we delivered a naked, slimy Claver onto a steel pallet. He shivered and mewed. It was almost enough to make me feel sorry for the bastard. Almost.
"He's a good grow, if that can be said about Claver,"
Anne said, letting go of his eyelid. The eyeball underneath rolled away from us, and he snapped that eyelid shut when he was able.
"I don't feel like a good grow,"
he said in a croaking voice. He kept his eyes screwed shut.
"Can you turn off those lights?"
"No,"
Anne told him flatly. Claver chuckled and coughed.
"You get an F in bedside manners, my dear."
Anne hauled him up into a sitting position. Claver hissed. I took his arm and looked meaningfully at Anne.
"I'll take it from here."
She looked doubtfully from Claver to me, then to Winslade, who was just arriving. Winslade had a grim expression on his face. She put her hands on her hips and sighed.
"If you're just going to recycle him again, why do you bother going through all this trouble to mess up my schedule?"
"Because,"
Claver answered, his eyes still squinched tightly,
"they'll doctor the records afterward. A few bad grows, no ID assigned, nothing to show I was ever here."
The funny thing was that Claver might be right. I'd suffered just such a fate a year or so back, when people had wanted to question me. It gave me pause and made me doubt my actions. Was this revenge-related? Claver may have had something to do with the perming of my family, but I couldn't be rock-solid certain of that. Sternly, I told myself we had to do what we had to do. Claver had caused a lot of deaths back on Tau Ceti before this. Hell, he'd even gotten a load of squids, nabs, and saurians killed on Machine World. Half-lifting him off the table, I helped him to the lockers where a smart cloth jumper was applied. It wrapped itself over his body, and Winslade made a flicking gesture toward the hatch.
"My office,"
Winslade said. Claver perked up when he heard Winslade's voice.
"Is that the venerable Primus?"
he asked.
"Or perhaps you've been elevated to the rank of Tribune by now."
"To you, I'm God,"
Winslade said. We left the revival chamber, abandoning Anne to her grim work. She looked after us fretfully. I knew she didn't like any kind of mistreatment. She especially felt protective of those she'd returned to life personally. Some part of her brain believed she'd mothered us all, I think. We reached Winslade's office a minute later. Claver was still limping, and he'd only forced his eyes once or twice.
"Snap out of it, Claver," Winslade said. "We know you're a good grow."
"My eyes, they burn this time. You ever get that? Sometimes you can't take light at all. Can you dim the interior?"
Winslade and I exchanged glances. It could be true. Fresh-grown eyes were often sensitive, like nerves severed and later re-knit. They sent odd signals to the mind until they settled in. "It could be true, sir," I said to Winslade. "I've had trouble with my eyes at times." Winslade gave Claver an appraising glance. I noticed Winslade had his sidearm in his hand. After a moment of hesitation, Winslade reached for the light panel. But before he touched the pad and lowered the lights, he reversed himself and jabbed the muzzle of his sidearm into Claver's gut. The prisoner made a woofing sound and coughed. His eyes opened wide, and he made choking sounds. "Changed your mind, sir?" I asked the Primus. Winslade pointed with one thin-boned finger at Claver's hand. I looked down and watched as Claver's hand retreated from my belt.
"He went for your weapon when I reached for the lights. You're overconfident with those big muscles of yours, veteran. They won't do you any good at all with your brains splattered on the ceiling."
I nodded tightly. "Thank you, sir." Winslade prodded Claver methodically with the barrel of his gun.
"Let's have a little talk, shall we?"
he asked.
"What for? You've already made up your minds. Just record my confession or whatever you want, blow my brains out. My eyes really do burn. I'm ready to recycle right now.
What happened aboard the freighter?
Winslade asked.
We were attacked and robbed. It was piracy, plain and simple.
Winslade sighed.
Let's be more specific. Start with your personal story.
He's just going to make something up, I commented.
We'll get to the truth in time, Winslade said dispassionately. But we might as well start with his fabricated version first. I find it's cathartic for some criminals.
Claver looked from one of us to the next. There was no pity in our eyes now. He'd lost all of mine when he'd tried to grab my gun.
All right, he said, judging it was time to say his piece. It was weird, actually. Pod-like things attached themselves to the ship as we left warp. They burned through the hull very quickly. The ship was a freighter. We didn't have much in the way of weapons or troops, just a few onboard Marines. My entire crew was overwhelmed and killed. I died on the bridge, giving orders.
Winslade nodded thoughtfully. What killed you specifically?
Some kind of gas got into the vents. We didn't have our vac suits on, stupid, I know. I think the fumes were created by an acidic fluid the creatures emitted.
That's it?
Winslade asked, his eyebrows lifting high.
Yeah, that's it. To repeat, we came out of warp near Earth, and these pod creatures jumped us. Then I died. I don't know what happened after that.
You lost the shipment, I said. The freighter crashed into the spaceport and killed about 30,000 people.
30,000?
Claver asked, impressed.
At least. Many of them were permed. Two legions were in attendance to ceremonially welcome your death ship. What do plants want with metal in any case?
Winslade asked. We both looked at him.
That ship they used to follow my freighter and attack, Claver said. It was metal, or at least it had some metal parts.
Winslade nodded.
I suppose some parts of a starship have to be metal.
There you have it, Claver said with a helpless shrug. It was a tragedy all the way around. You gentlemen have my utmost sympathy. If this briefing is over, I'd like to recover to my stateroom.
Winslade's gun jabbed him again. This time it was a hard poke in the ribs. Claver grunted and clutched a spot there. As I watched, it began to ooze blood and turn purple.
As I said, Winslade commented in a languid voice, it will take time to get to the truth. Fortunately, I have time.
Claver's eyes were wide open now. He looked like a caged animal. I did my best to look unsympathetic, but I was starting to feel he'd told his story. It sounded real enough.
Various bastards, Claver said. What do you want me to say? If the truth isn't good enough for you, maybe you should just write it down for me so I can sign it. That would save us all a lot of time and trouble.
Winslade lowered his gun. Instead of aiming it at Claver's gut, he aimed it at his foot.
You have far too many toes, in my opinion. We'll begin removing the excess shortly. Every 30 seconds I'll remove another until we run out. Then we'll stop for some blood staunching and get to work on these fingers. I might have to reload as well.
There was steel in Winslade's eyes. I could see it. He might be an arrogant prick, but he had a spine when it came to dealing out pain. Claver saw it, too. He believed, and he buckled.
You prick, he said. I was on the ship. I died there, just like I said. What else do you want from me?
I want to hear what you know about these creatures. Why might they be following you? Why did they attack you? And how did they come to be here on this world that was supposedly uninhabited?
I never said I was out here at all. Wherever here is, I told you I was on my way to Earth.
Winslade nuzzled Claver's toes with the barrel of his pistol. Claver twitched while Winslade remained strangely expressionless.
"I'm getting bored,"
Winslade said, selecting a toe. It was the middle one on Claver's left foot.
"Hold him, veteran."
"They're called the Whirr," Claver said suddenly. "It's a squid word, I believe. Basically, they're pod people. They come from beyond our frontier."
"All right, then," Winslade said. "We're getting somewhere. Where are these creatures from?"
"I don't know."
Winslade walked angrily to his desk and brought up a star map.
"This is where we are now, Claver," he said, tapping the K-class star labeled L-374. "What do you know about it?"
Claver eyed the map.
"Out there, huh? That planet is uninhabited."
"Wrong," Winslade said. "The planet was marked as uninhabited because that was true when it was last surveyed by the Empire. But that was probably 300 years ago, before the Industrial Revolution back on Earth. Can you explain the discrepancy?"
"Maybe. 300 years, that's plenty of time for the Whirr to seed a planet."
A whisper of a smile played on Winslade's mouth.
"I'm a little surprised," he said. "I honestly thought I'd have to remove appendages before you'd confess to treason."
"First off," Claver retorted, "I only talked because I know you're a cold snake that would actually follow through."
"And you were correct."
"But secondly, I have to ask, Primus, by what stretch of the imagination does my helpful information amount to treason?"
Winslade sucked in a breath through his narrow nostrils. He raised a skinny index finger to his nose and tapped it there.
"You could not have this information without having dealt with this enemy. Clandestine interactions with a renegade alien species amount to treason, not just on Earth, but by the laws of the Galactic Empire itself. Further, you have withheld information concerning this enemy when first questioned. Let us call that a second count of treason."
"Let's not," Claver said. "Okay, you have me, or at least this version of me. Let's talk business. I want a signed immunity agreement, then I'll tell you what else I know."
"I have another proposal,"
Winslade said, his eyes flashing dangerously. At that moment, Winslade's tapper began beeping. I knew that sound. There was an emergency call coming in. Winslade stepped away and consulted his arm. Mine began flashing and beeping as well. We both looked up at one another at the same moment after reading the incoming priority message. The giants from the forest. They were on the march. Chapter 20. About 5 minutes after I left Winslade to continue Claver's interrogation, I found myself manning a trench line we'd hastily dug with the aid of our pigs. Pigs were huge walking drones that buzzed and revved. They were still digging, carving up the soft, dark loam of the forest floor into curling rolls of dirt. Using something on the front of the machines that looked like a plowshare, the earth was gouged and thrown up in the direction of the wild forest. The hole behind me was over a meter deep. The dirt pile on the forest side formed a handy barrier we could rest our rifles on. Already the pigs had dug a double-ringed defensive earthwork that encircled the lifter that rested on its struts in the middle. I didn't think our dug-in defenses were going to do us much good against the giant aliens, however. Unlike the techs driving the drones and most of our officers, I'd actually seen and done battle with one of these giants. I knew they would step right over these trench lines, or worse, step down into them, crushing us. So far, the pod creatures had yet to show themselves. My helmet-based tactical display indicated they were out there, but I couldn't see them yet due to what might be called undergrowth in this forest of immense proportions. Fern-like plants 10 meters high were everywhere, blocking my vision and generally getting in the way.
"How is this even possible?" Carlos demanded of no one in particular.
He'd been revived by the time we returned to the lifter. Before Winslade and I had commandeered the machine that doled out life in order to revive Claver. Fresh from a violent death, Carlos's voice seemed less confident than usual.
"How's what possible, specialist?" I asked.
"How can these tree aliens move at all? I mean, they're just plants, right? They haven't got any muscles. I don't get it."